I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight on mining, switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the wheel line while I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me.
Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, the coronavirus just gets worse and worse and worse. Most of it is in China. Many airlines have ceased flying to China. Cathay Pacific, which is out of Hong Kong, has asked its employees, most of its employees, to take an unpaid leave of absence for the duration to conserve cash for the airlines. Much of its business involves China, involves flights to China, and they're canceling them for safety reasons. And the death toll and the numbers of cases just keep climbing in China, and that is assuming we believe them. That is a bit of an act of faith, but taking it at face value, the numbers just keep climbing, as of about 3 hours ago, there were 28,276 confirmed cases in China, and 565 deaths. There are, I believe, now 6 cases in Canada, no deaths. We haven't seen the last of this one. It would be hard not to collapse laughing at the results of the Monday night Democratic primaries in the state of Iowa. Not so much at the results, in the sense of it appears that homosexual South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg beat Bernie Sanders narrowly in third place. Somewhat farther back was Elizabeth Warren. In fourth place, humiliatingly, with about 15% of the caucus vote, Vice President Biden. in fifth place, a somewhat better campaigner, Amy Klobuchar, of a whole lot other than Andrew Yang. She's the only one who really seems to manifest any particular balance or even decency. But well, several interesting things. Despite a lot of hype that this, the people will be streaming out to these caucuses because of anger at Donald Trump, actually attendance was down over 2 years ago, 3 years, sorry, yeah, 4 years ago rather, but down over 2016. Well, that's kind of interesting. Then, of course, there was just the debacle of the counting. Counting was supposed to be done by an app. It seems that the app was more of an ass than an app. Even as of today, almost two full days later, we don't have the final results. I think we're up to about 80-some of the caucuses. It's a little more complicated than just calculating the mark on a single ballot. Apparently, you list your preferences, one and two. So obviously your first preference gets counted first. And then, it's somewhat more complicated, they apportion the second preferences, and that gives them a final total of support for each candidate in each caucus. For reasons that are hard to fathom, it was the app completely failed. And as the precinct captains tried to call in the results, they often waited 90 minutes or more from the Democratic Party headquarters, and then sometimes were just hung up on. It's fair to say that if the Democrats cannot run a reasonable, the efficient primary, do they really think that they're going to be able to run the country? I think this looks very good for Donald Trump. Of course, this is February. A lot can happen between now and November. But I think things are looking better and better for him. Of course, the Democrats are nowhere near settling upon a candidate. They're off to New Hampshire. The leading candidates, of course, exceedingly frustrated, and rightly so. They'd hoped to make a victory announcement on Monday night, or at least a claim victory, even if they didn't come first, claim a moral victory, or claim that they'd done better than had been expected, or whatever. Well, none of that could be done with any credibility, because the numbers weren't it. Some are saying that the only real winner on Monday night was Donald Trump. I find the incompetent debacle interesting. Well, then the talking heads got on to talking about, maybe Iowa should never have happened. Why Iowa is, my word, not theirs, is a white bread state. There are not as many blacks there. I think blacks are only about 4% of Iowa. They're 11% nationally. So it's not representative. It's not diverse. Why should it go off first, and so on? But, supposing the primary being held among Democrats in Mississippi, the Democratic Party now in Mississippi is overwhelmingly black. What a white had said, the problem is Mississippi is not diverse enough. There are too many blacks. Whoa! Wouldn't be allowed to say that, would you? While we're at that, this is a comment from Dr. James Sanchez, this is about Mayor Pete's quiz. To think this is a real survey from a presidential campaign is astonishing. This went from leftiest universities to mainstream in record time. What's next? I'll play a little bit of this. It's rather interesting.
Before this term microaggression was introduced 6 months ago, did you ever have things that you would run up against where you were like, I just wish that white people stopped doing X?
Yeah, all the time.
Like what?
Meth.
So, Pete Buttigieg, for people who don't know, he sent this out, I believe, to all of his staffers.
He did?
Yeah. The microaggression test.
Oh, that's...
Pete Buttigieg. That's good. Mm-hmm. So I want to know if anyone else... We did the white privilege survey a while back, so question right. Have any of you ever taken or been forced to take from your HR department at your office a microaggressions test? And what did you score? I try and set the high score.
Yes.
Yeah. Like a ping pong machine. Yeah. Is that not how it works? Rachel Levitt, and then I tap it. So, do you still play? Does anyone still play ping? It's lost on you.
It's not
you
ping-pong.
And your iPhones and your TikToks. So this comes from Pete Buttigieg, who's obviously been struggling with black voters. I wonder why. The man is positively translucent, and this was sent out. A survey on microaggressions in the workplace. So thank the Lord for the New York Times, because we really need to print this out. Apparently, on a 1997 Xerox machine.
Yeah.
Someone with the Kinko's.
Oldie but goodie, baby. Oldie but goodie.
And this is meant to, it says here, so I want you guys to all take it. We have the link, I believe, in the description.
Okay.
Survey microaggressions in the workplace. Please only fill out the survey if you identify as a person of color.
Identify.
We identify.
Everyone.
Jack Hughes!
Hey, I actually identify as white.
Really?
Yeah.
No, we don't care. Yeah. We'll never accept you amongst our ranks.
White is a color, isn't it?
It's a shade.
How dare you, sir?
But the answers are anonymous and will be used to inform our white colleagues about privilege and microaggressions. In other words, it's not going to the phone.
Hold on, can I ask you a question? How did they decide which ones were white or not white? And this is a legitimate question.
It is.
If they have to self-identify, that meant they went around to everyone and they said, okay, should you get this email or should you not get this email?
And we should,
that sounds like an SS thing to do.
We should know that the answers are plus minus of about 19% because Rachel Dolezal was counted four times. I don't know how she got
every time.
The Iowa Fields so team. But you know what? That's up to her. She really committed.
It was the leave.
all right, so we will all answer it.
Okay.
But considering that we only identify as people of color, which is about as legitimate as someone identifying as a biological female, but hey, your rule is not ours. I'm primarily going to focus on the two people of color, quarter black Garrett and half Asian lawyer Bill Richmond.
Thank you.
And you look definitively more Asian than he looks black.
Yeah, that's for sure.
No, don't.
This is the reason for the test.
This is a microaggression.
This is exactly right. His cousins are going, he said, don't know about the milkman. All right, so most of these questions will be directed to you. Okay, so these questions, first question,
macro.
This is not a beneath the service. These are in your right.
Over the table.
In the workplace, have you ever experienced the following from a white colleague? I appreciate you uniting America. Have you ever experienced this from a white colleague?
Exactly what I read.
Being interrupted or talked over.
Yes. Yeah.
Hold on, I want to hear the recorder.
Yes, that's what it is.
Yes, both of you.
I've never not experienced that.
But what if you had been interrupted by not a white colleague?
Then it's
what happens there?
The universe explodes and everyone votes for Trump.
Before or after the explosion? Yeah. You know what? Screw my rules. I want everyone to answer this because, you know, I'm white, and Gerald, you're very white, and an audio way is, I mean, you're whiter than Buttigieg.
Yeah. Can we answer this question in two ways? I want everyone to answer the question both from a white colleague, but also from a non-white colleague.
Right.
Because I'm fairly certain I've done every one of these to Gerald twice today.
And by the way, as far as the interrupted, it's happened, I would say, 100% of my female colleagues. I always get interrupted.
True.
Yeah, Gerald, stop interrupting.
So who here has, let's see, show of hands. I think we've all been interrupted here.
Right. Yeah, been interrupted.
Like a person. Yeah. Who here has been interrupted by exclusively white colleagues? We're really learning something about ourselves.
I only surround myself with the the introspection is amazing.
In the workplace, let me keep the through line here. What did you say?
Nothing.
Bleep it. I can't trust him to anything that he says that goes out the air, just bleep it. Air on the side of caution. Again, in the workplace, have you ever experienced the following from a white colleague? Have you ever been left off a relevant email chain?
Aww.
Sad
one. Yeah.
Well, this wouldn't have been a question until Obama phone lady.
True. Who's Obama phone lady?
I got my phone! In other words, now everybody is being excluded from email chains.
Oh.
Turns out she was running the second
one. I mean, I'd have to check my email.
Okay.
No.
How do you do that on this paper?
How does someone answer this? Okay, has anyone here ever been left off a relevant email chain?
Yeah. Well, you were left off. How do you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you
don't get any emails because you were left out of all of them.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
You know what?
I mean, people, I leave myself off relevant.
This is a kind of like a good comedy show. I'm not going to play all of it, but it's good to see these two comedians taking apart this some of this politically correct, utterly touchy-feely nonsense, like microaggressions, whatever that is. Anyway, here's a piece by one of the people who has one of the best websites, Michael Walsh. He's a longtime activist, author, and so on. And this is, he says, the game is over for the new religion of Holocaust, or the big Holocaust story, which is being used to beat up on Germans and keep people guilty. And he said, Russian President Vladimir Putin is undeniably a shrewd strategist. Unlike the West's political pygmy class, Vladimir Putin is able to deal with crisis while simultaneously calculating the effects of his future strategy. Both Putin and his foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, recently conceded that the findings of genuine, that is, revisionist historians, are legitimate and should be permissible. Their fear is how the peoples of Russia and the Western democracies might react should they discover that everything they'd been told about Adolf Hitler, the Third Reich, and World War II was the propaganda of the victories. The victors. Has the Russian president opened the Pandora's box by engaging Poland in a foul-mouthed spat over whether Poland in 1944 was occupied or liberated by the Red Army? Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky got in on the revisionist act by claiming that the USSR ignited World War II. The outcome is that Putin has unwittingly or shrewdly catapulted World War II revisionism into the world's breakfast plates. Real history, or real, that's revisionism, is now fashionable and is now making the public domain. And that's, of course, what they've tried to slap down and suppress for, since the end of the Second World War. When President Putin and the world's most powerful foreign minister, Haaretz, that's a very prominent Jewish paper in Israel, and prominent Israeli historians question exaggerations and distortions relating to the so-called Holocaust, it is time to answer, is the game over? Haaretz says Holocaust denial, or that is disbelief, has become a global and accepted internet phenomenon. The news platform adds, quote, this approach has added anti-Semitic bonus, has the added anti-Semitic bonus of arguing that the entire world, and Germans and Palestinians specifically, were the victims of a gigantic Jewish hoax. So they're recognizing that despite all efforts to try to slap down questioning and this about the distortions of World War II, that there's a growing skepticism. It's true, says Michael Walsh. A CNN poll in 2018 found that a fifth of French adults under the age of 35 had never heard of the Holocaust, compared to just 5% in occupied Germany. Another poll found that 31% of adults in the United States thought 2 million Jews or fewer were killed. And there's a delicious question here as to whether this is a result of the horrific American education system, how horrifically incompetent. Or is it perhaps a reflection of the fact that increasingly a lot of people don't care? I mean, how many people, Jews, died in World War II, which ended 75 years ago, is not of any great moment to most people, especially in the increasingly non-white United States. The average black doesn't get up in the morning and worry his crack-addled brain as to how many Jews might have died in World War II. He has other things on his mind. If he's a dutiful employed person, he probably has to haul himself off to work, worry about paying the bills and things like that. What has become almost the new religion for the elites. It hasn't necessarily gotten as much traction as they might have hoped with others. And I find that interesting. A recent poll in Italy found that in the past 15 years, the number of people who rightly believe that the Holocaust never happened has increased fivefold. And by the Holocaust, I would have to say, we have to define it. It is the usual claims of roughly 6 million Jews killed, most of them in gas chambers, by a deliberate plot, an organized plot, by the National Socialist Government of Germany. That's the new religion of Holocaust. Now, to say it never happened probably means they're saying the numbers are vastly exaggerated. I doubt anybody, or almost anybody, would say no Jews died. But, okay. Outside of Europe, says Mike Walsh, and America's knowledge of the Holocaust drops even further. According to the Anti-Defamation League poll of 102 countries, most people in the Middle East, North and Sub-Saharan Africa, and in Asia had not heard of the Holocaust. Of those who had, substantial proportions in each country thought it was either exaggerated or a complete myth. I find that very interesting. There's a good reason very few people in these places have heard about the Holocaust. I'll tell you, it's actually a healthy reason. It's not really ignorance, it's healthy. What's it to them? And that's really a very good question. The so-called Holocaust story is the story of what happened to one group, namely the Jews, in World War II. And to wit, the 6 million or so were killed by a plot. It wasn't accidental, these weren't acts of war, it was a deliberate program which came right from Adolf Hitler, and most of them were killed in detention camps like Auschwitz by methods of gassing. That's the story. Well, now, supposing you are in Kenya, and you're Jomo, you're a small businessman. Well, what possible interest or relevance to you is the story of what may or may not have happened to Jews 75 years ago in far-off Poland and Central Europe? Well, I'll tell you, it's of exactly no interest. And there's nothing wrong about that. It's actually healthy. It's healthy to be concerned about you, your family, and your tribe. If you are way off in Hamilton, Ontario, of what moment or interest is it to you that back in 1994, the little Negroes in Rwanda, the Hutu tribe, slaughtered, in many cases by horrific methods, including burning people alive in a church and so on, about 1 million of the taller Negroes, the Tutsi tribe? Well, to be quite blunt about it, it's of almost no concern. As a person who has a big interest in history and current politics, yes, I know about it, and I can give you a little bit of information about it. But do I care? Well, yeah, it's sad that people are killed. Yeah, like in a very general sense, I guess I could say I care. But do I care enough to study it? Would I care enough to put up a memorial to it? Would I care enough to try to lobby my politicians to declare a Rwandan Holocaust Day? No. Why? Well, because it's not my tribe, and it's not really my concern. Well, most of the rest of the world has that very healthy view. It's just not a big issue, and they're not interested. And they're not going to be guilted into anything because of it. That seems to be a problem that only we have. And kind of reasoning back from that, what we should be doing is countering this new religion of Holocaust when it's pushed on us by simply saying it's not our business. I'll tell you why. Even according to the tale, it didn't happen here, as in Canada or the United States, right? Okay. We didn't do it, whatever it was. And it didn't happen to us, right? To our people. So why should we care? That's somebody else's concern. One of the genius activities of the so-called Holocaust story is its ability to enroll people as caring and concerned about it for whom there really need be no concern. This leads, going back to the Mike Walsh article, this leads to the million-dollar question. Public skepticism in the Holocaust is at an all-time high and is gathering momentum. Haaretz blames the cynicism in the Holocaust propaganda, laments that the cynicism about Holocaust propaganda unites the far right and the far left and the Muslim world. How will an awakened world respond to their learning that it is being duped by history's most successful scam? And if I were part of the Holocaust lobby that pushes for ever more recognition and ceremonies and so on, I would worry about that. When the dummies finally wake up to the fact they've been gulled, it may not be pretty. And back to Mike Washington, there is the vexed question. What happens when, after being called to account, Israel is obliged to return or compensate for the hundreds of billions in reparations that have funded world Jewry, especially the State of Israel, for the better part of 75 years? Of many questions posed, who will compensate the hundreds of Europeans who've been prosecuted, fined, and imprisoned for investigating the Holocaust-related fraud? For instance, people like my friend Alfred Schaefer, my friend Monica Schaefer, Gerhard Ittner, Robert Faurisson, and many, many others. People who've gone to jail, been fined, had their lives ruined because they dared to question the new religion of Holocaust. Will they ever be compensated? Well, my guess is they won't be. This question has already been raised in Russia. Their revisionist Roman Yushkov was awarded 50,000 rubles, or roughly $800, in compensation for his being persecuted in connection with his right to publicly claim that the new religion of Holocaust is a scam sponsored by politicians dependent upon Jewish patronage. Wow. And he got compensated. Here's a statement that's contained in Mike Walsh's article. It's a quotation from Nahum Goldman, who's a very prominent Jewish leader. Quote, "The state of Israel would not have half of its present infrastructure. Every train in Israel is German. The ships are German as well as electricity, a big part of industry, without mentioning the individual pensions paid to survivors. Germany has been bled white for nearly three quarters of a century to compensate things that perhaps never quite happened the way we were told." This was the result of the Murmansk writer Anton Blagin's article. Jews returned the German money for fraud with 6 million Jews. Now, the latter article was penned after having checked their original records. Blagin discovered the Jews had not been held at Auschwitz, which internment facility was specifically built for non-Jewish inmates. I've not heard this before. But suffice it to say that it's only in the supposedly free world, which isn't, where there's not already a lot of skepticism and scholarship being done on this so-called Holocaust, this story, that much of the world simply says it didn't happen, or alternatively, so what? Now, Tuesday night was a State of the Union address by President Trump. I think it's widely seen as a tremendous public relations coup. Rush Limbaugh, the great talk show radio host, announced very recently that he has stage 4 lung cancer in both lungs, and although he's taking aggressive treatment, the prognosis is probably not particularly good. Donald Trump gave this tremendous communicator the highest civilian award in the United States, the Freedom Award, and Melania Trump pinned it on him. He welcomed back a vet's family, and with a big surprise to the family in the gallery, their husband and father, who'd been, I believe, in Afghanistan, had come home, and there was just this most touching reunion. Donald Trump announced a scholarship for a person from a black poor area of Philadelphia. It was an absolutely masterful performance, and no wonder at the end of the night, Nancy Pelosi could be seen tearing up the State of the Union speech page by page. To me, it was demonstrative of one very, very, very frustrated woman. Shucks! After we thought we'd got it, the House had passed articles of impeachment. We'd sent it on to the Senate. The Senate basically sent it away, and it was known that what will happen today, and as it indeed did happen, Donald Trump was the Senate acquitted him, or did not pass the articles of impeachment, I guess, to be absolutely accurate about it. And it must be immensely frustrating, the effort to stage a coup d'etat to wipe out the results of the last election have spectacularly failed. here's a commentary from Alan Knutson. So far, the beneficiary for the Democratic candidates of the impeachment trial seems to be Pete Buttigieg, the openly homosexual mayor of South Bend, Indiana. And now with the software apps mock-up, he was leading last night, and he continues to lead today by a slim margin. That makes sense that the arch-conspirator George Soros would want to promote an open homosexual against Trump, because in his mind, his way of thinking, that is what is needed to counter the bigotry, the racism, the homophobia, the misogyny, and the xenophobia of the political right and any of Trump's supporters. Jews always have to promote the most in-your-face, against-your-values, revolutionary personality they can find to attack Western culture and civilization. And even though he's a white male, in quotation marks, the fact that he's an open homosexual is what makes him a winner for Soros, blacks, Latinos, Muslims, women, and other people of color of the global South. Which makes him a winner for Soros, period. Blacks, Latinos, Muslims, women of color, and people of color of the global South are now all considered passe when compared to the homosexual or the transgendered with pedophilia leanings. Not saying necessarily that Pete Buttigieg does have that. And according to this commentator, to Alan Knutson, Mike Bloomberg, I believe, will be the one who ends up managing a brokerage convention for the Dems for a moderate candidate, at which point we could see the return of Hillary or the introduction of Michelle Obama as a potential candidate to go against Trump. They won't win, but I think this is what's going on. Well, that's his opinion, and I think we're a long way before that right now. Long way because while the results of the Iowa primaries caucuses, a little bit of a surprise. It's not yet a trend. What will happen next week in New Hampshire? That may not be a trend. Buttigieg is, I think, fourth, although that could change. What's going to happen to the increasingly old and doddering-looking Joe Biden? It's hard to know. I do like this man's comment about rubbing your face in homosexuality. In fact, one of the commentators last night on CNN made the observation that the Iowa primary was not a bad thing. Yes, the results still weren't really in, but what a wonderful thing that apparently leading it is an openly homosexual man who has I think it's a husband, or maybe it's a wife, I don't know. Anyway, a partner addressed by the traditional terms up until very recently were only applied to traditional marriages. Well, what a breakthrough. What a happening thing. I think what it is a way to grind America's traditionalist face in the muck. My guess is that it's not going to work that way. I'm not convinced that Buttigieg is going to be the Democrat nominee. But many of the others are almost as reprehensible. Bernie Sanders, a Jewish radical socialist, if he, by dint of hard work, becomes the party's nominee, I think Americans will turn massively against the Democratic Party and will not only re-elect Donald Trump, but very likely hand the Democrats a stunning reversal in the House of Representatives. Anyway, probably a little early to get too definitive in predictions, because it's often said that a week is a long time in politics. Well, we've got a good many weeks between now and then. But just looking at this as a slice of life for the moment, that's about where I would see it. But I read something by Michael Hoffman. Michael Hoffman is a gifted commentator. He is a scholar of the Talmud and Jews. He's written a couple of books, very good books on Jews. And he's addressing a question. Satan in the Kabbalah. Is the word Satan actually used? This questioner says to him, can't find any translation online. Send me the Hebrew word. Israel must make sacrifices to Satan so that it will leave Israel unmolested. That's a quotation from the Talmud. And Michael Hoffman replies, the words Satan and demonic powers are in fact used interchangeably in the Zohar or Talmud. For example, in the general context of Zohar, it gives a reference which I won't. It concerns the necessity of Israel making offerings to Satan. It is written, the demonic powers should be given a portion, occupying and assuaging them so they will not disturb Israel's intimacy with God. And this is from the Zohar, the Pritzker edition from Stanford University of 2007. So the idea is you sort of buy off these satanic powers with a bribe so that they'll leave you alone. Referring to a sacrifice of a goat in the same passage of Zohar, it is written, this goat is intended to preoccupy Satan, leaving Israel alone with God. As in many pagan religions, according to Kabbalistic dogma, The demons must be propitiated with blood sacrifice so that the life of the people of Israel may continue unmolested. When there are severe disturbances in superstitious societies such as these, they result in ever more propitiations to Satan so as to restore peace and tranquility. When Hernando Cortes and the Catholic Spaniards were closing in on the Aztec capital of Mexico City in 1521, the Aztec priests began frenetically sacrificing ever more victims on their blood-smoking pyramid. Yeah, and that's really interesting. I mean, there were already terrific numbers of people butchered to the heathen gods of the Aztecs. But under additional stress, the blood sacrifices became even greater. And Michael Hoffman asks, it's unfortunate the fact that the authenticated text of the ancient Zohar insinuates a certain urgency to the sacrifice of Goyim, that's non-Jews, that Israel must make to Satan, in that where no such sacrifice is made, it is believed that Satan will sacrifice rabbis. The Zohar states that this occurred to 10 rabbis who were killed in the 2nd century A.D. In many passages of the Zohar, the conflation of Yahweh and Satan is difficult to miss. For instance, the book of Genesis testifies that the biblical patriarch Joseph was beloved by God, while the Zohar states that for the crime of kidnapping and selling Joseph, which Joseph's brothers had committed, it was Satan who sought retribution against Joseph's enemies. Well, anyway, some of this is fairly abstract, but always interesting. Michael Hoffman III is a great researcher and a great writer. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhatResistanceRadio.com. Going to take a musical break, and I'm going to play some good German drinking music, which I hope you'll enjoy. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, till, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extend,